All right, Strongpreneur Nation, today I had the privilege of talking to Matt White. He is the owner, president, guru, whatever you want to call him, of the Remodeler's Edge. Is an online marketing program for remodelers that helps them generate more leads and sales and all that good stuff. He's also the president of Jolt CMS. He's got a bunch of things happening where he's helping contractors in different industries, grow stronger, uncommon businesses. The one thing I'm excited to share with you here is head over to www.stopsellingstarthelping.com. That is his book that just came out. You can hop on Amazon and buy it there. But the whole point is when you just take the posture of being a helper and get away from that traditional pushy sales approach, you're going to see that your business is going to grow and you're going to be able to connect with more people and build a stronger pipeline and all that other stuff. So sit back, throw in the earbuds, grab your favorite beverage. Unless you were driving, people, then don't drink the bourbon. And listen to this conversation that Matt and I have about how to market your contracting business online. I know you'll enjoy it. And when you're done, go buy his book and hop over to iTunes and give us a review as well, if you would. So without any more mumbo jumbo running to the lips on my end, here's Matt White. All right, Matt, welcome to the Strongpreneur Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Glad to have you here, man. Where are you calling from today?
I'm out of the Cleveland, Ohio area, closer to Akron, I suppose, but Northeast Ohio, we could say.
All right. Are you a Browns fan?
I try to be.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Not easy, but I try.
Oh, man, you've had a rough few years there, huh?
We've got the Cavs. That's what I try to lean towards. So we'll go with LeBron and the Cavs for now.
That's right. Were you happy when he came back?
Yes, I actually had season tickets the first time around, and so I was pretty disappointed when he left the first time, but certainly glad to have him back. So it's all good. So hopefully we've got a big game tomorrow night, so hopefully we should be in good shape.
Good deal, man. Yeah, I was in Chicago when we had Michael, and it was a nice time.
So yeah, cool.
Enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, as I alluded to in the intro, you know, you're a marketing guy for contractors and stuff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you ended up doing this, and a little bit of your background, man?
Sure. So my official background is that I'm an advertising guy. So I came out of school with an advertising degree and started working in the agency business. Did that for the first 4 or 5 years of my career, and then was downsized early on from a big agency in Cleveland. And that was about a month prior to the 9/11 attacks. So nobody was hiring, nobody was doing anything come late 2001. So that was the first time I started my business and launched that probably November of 2001. And then we were mostly marketing online and offline. Online was kind of just coming into the swing of things with search engines and web design and stuff like that. And then I merged with a company for a while and then went back to work for somebody for about 5 years. And then in 2009, launched my current company, which is called Jolt CMS. And Jolt is, the CMS stands for Content Marketing Services. And that is, a lot of the stuff online, and we can get into some of the details there. But then out of that spun what we call the Remodeler's Edge, which is a company that we do online marketing and website design for remodelers specifically. And then we also have, I founded an organization called Remodeler Marketing Institute just late last year that is solely focused on providing marketing and both online and offline, sales-related information, things like that, all kind of targeting remodelers, but it certainly applies to contractors and even small business owners, no matter what kind of business you're in. So that's my background in 3 minutes.
Dang, man. So yeah, you got a few irons in the fire there.
Yes. Shiny object syndrome, we call it.
That's the blessing and the curse of the entrepreneur, I guess.
Absolutely.
So listen, I want to talk a little bit about your background in working for an agency. And I guess the one question that came to my mind when you shared that was, How is marketing for contractors different than you might see in other industries, other businesses?
The first thing that comes to mind is budget. Budget seems to always be, come up in mind as far as the conversations go. Whereas sometimes in the agency world, when you're working with, much larger organizations and companies, and they've got, tens of thousands or even millions of dollars to spend on a campaign each year or whatever, that comes into play. So I think you have to be smarter, and more creative in the use of the budget that is there. But it's also, I think, what I love about the contract modeler and that world is, and even like I said too, even just small business owners in general, is just that ability to relate to what they're going through. I'm a small business owner myself, and so what I love about the business most is certainly that initial, the part about helping them understand, helping them get a feel for things, kind of taking off from there. And what I also see then is remodelers and contractors and plumbers and the full range always want their hands in it. They're doing this thing on a day-to-day basis, and so they are living it, whether they would call it living the dream or call it living the nightmare, depending on the time of day, I guess. It really does change. But their livelihood is based on making a buck or not that month, and from the agency world, again, I think a lot of that is much bigger picture. We talk about branding and we talk about campaigns and TV spots and all this kind of stuff. Whereas, when we're talking to a contractor, it's, okay, I've got $1,000 a month to spend, or I got a couple $1,000 a month to spend, or even less than that in some cases. And, what's the best way I can get the most, the most bang from this buck? And so we get creative with what's there. And we do a lot of stuff. 99% of the things we do is online. So, we don't do direct mails and that kind of stuff for the most part. If somebody needs a logo or somebody needs a brochure, sometimes we'll throw that in. But where we really try to focus is getting people who are looking for their product anyway, right? If I'm going to remodel my home or looking to redo my basement, or I need a new roof, somebody's going online and they're searching for it. And what we want to do is make sure that our clients come up and pop up in those search engines from a local perspective, because they're, if I'm searching here in Cleveland, I don't care about a, roofer out in Colorado. Yeah. I want somebody right here. So we focus a lot on that. And then the big picture of what we try to do is what I kind of call helping versus selling, which is a lot of what we focus on is providing educational, informational, and sometimes entertaining content from a customer's perspective. So again, if I'm a roofing contractor, I want to help their potential client learn what's the difference between the different styles of roofing materials, or how long does something take typically, or what's the difference in a 10-year warranty and a 25-year warranty, and why, and all those details, and really help educate somebody through that process, as opposed to just, hey, $1,000 off your roof, here's the price, here's what we do, here's how fast we can do it, and get into a price war. So we really try to look at that helping mentality instead of hitting them over the head and selling a lot.
So what do you think over the years has brought about that approach to selling, the whole content marketing approach? Like, why is that more, what's the word I'm looking for, more prevalent now?
Relevant, yeah,
more
sure.
Relevant.
I think it's absolutely the buying mentality. I think as buyers, we don't want to be sold, right? We don't want to feel taken advantage of. We hate walking into the used car dealership because we feel pressure. We start breaking out in hives because we feel like we're going to get beat up on, whatever situation. Same goes for walking into a retail store or a Home Depot. I was just at Lowe's this afternoon. There's great, great people. They do a lot of good helping and things like that. But at the same time, I want to know what's going on. I want to know why it is, why does it cost what it costs, and what's the process that goes in, and how is it that I, what are the things I should look at when I'm hiring a contractor, or even what are the steps I should go through when I'm buying a TV, So as consumers, we, again, would much prefer to be helped, as, just in general, right? I don't want to be considered sold. I'm kind of giving you air quotes in my, as I sit here, but, I don't want to feel sold. I don't want to feel like I was taken advantage of, but I do, if I walk away and I feel like, even if I didn't buy something, but I walked away from, whether it's a website or whether it was a conversation with somebody, or even a TV commercial in some cases, folks are doing better now where they're educating and they're helping and they're providing good, solid information instead of solely focusing on a price or an offer or a deal or a, you know, a hard sale. So I think it really does come back to the consumer. We buy differently. The fact that the web exists is huge. Back in, you know, 95, when I started in this business, the web wasn't a thing, or wasn't a big thing anyway. So, you know, the web itself has just opened up a huge, huge both opportunity from a, I think, from a business owner standpoint, but then also from a consumer standpoint. There's so much information that's out there as a marketer or as a business owner. You got to compete with all that, but the more you're helping, the more great information you can provide and stand out from somebody who's just in the traditional selling mentality. I think the better you are to, you know, to stand out from that crowd.
So before we get too deep into this, because I know this is going to keep coming up, the whole content marketing thing, I wanted to just have us each maybe take a second to define content marketing for some, in case there's a, you know, contractor out there listening to this that maybe has heard the term before but doesn't really know what it means. So how would you define that?
So I'm looking up right now because I use Content Marketing Institute as a definition, at least from a formal standpoint a lot of times.
I have one in my one of my presentations that I do that I copied and pasted from them because I think it's the best one. And I will bet you a hot chocolate with like liquor in it.
Yeah.
that you and I are going to have the same definition here, and we didn't plan this. So go ahead.
So I'll read this, but then I'll give you my own out of my own words in a second. But this says content marketing is the marketing and business process for creating and distributing relevant and valuable content to attract, acquire, and engage a clearly defined and understood target audience. And this is the key, with the objective of driving a profitable customer action.
That's
the same one you've got.
That's the exact one I use all the time. I've seen so many out there. So how do you put that in your own words?
So my simplest definition is help people instead of sell to them. Mm-hmm. So that's the book that you probably mentioned in the intro. It's called Stop Selling, Start Helping, and that's what I really try to break it down. Is content marketing is really helping people through the sales process instead of selling them through the sales process. And that's why I think the simplest form of content marketing is, as far as definition goes, is just help people, be useful. Jay Baer of Utility, if you've read the book Utility. Great book. And I quote his very, very simple quote, which is just be useful. And the more useful you can be, the more resourceful, the more information you can provide, the better education you can give to somebody down the road. Eventually, they're gonna trust you, and the credibility is built. And if they need what you have to sell, then they'll buy. If you're the one that held their hand all the way through that process, through the attracting, the acquiring, the engaging part of that other definition, if you've helped them through that, then ultimately that's where the profitable customer action comes out of.
Yeah, there's a story I've shared on here numerous times, and back when I owned a painting company in the Chicago area, we started writing blogs and producing content, and I remember wrote a couple blogs. One was on how to remove wallpaper. The other was on, I think, how to repair drywall, things like that. There were many that we did, but those were two that I wrote. Well, I knocked on this guy's door one day to do an estimate. And I said, hey, how'd you hear about us? You know, small talk. And he says, oh, I was removing wallpaper in my kid's room and it wasn't coming down. So I went to Google and I asked Google how to remove wallpaper. And an article you guys did came up and I just did what you said and it came off.
Nice.
And then I said, oh, that was cool. And then I said, and then he goes, well, and what's funny is he says, that was about a year ago.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And, and then he said a few months ago, my son, I think it was, opened the door too hard and put the doorknob through the wall. And his teenage boy or something just came flying into the room one day. And he says, I'm terrible at fixing drywall. So I went to Google and I asked Google how to repair drywall. And another thing that you guys did came up and I did it and it worked. And I said, well, man, I got to ask you. I said, why am I here then? Sounds like you're a do-it-yourselfer.
Yeah.
And basically, long story short, is he was getting transferred. Him or his wife was getting transferred in their job. And they needed to get the house on the market within the next couple of weeks or whatever. And it ended up being, I don't know, it was a $15,000 project that we did, all because of two how-to articles that we produced, probably a year before.
Right.
And so my, on your whole thing about, you know, like you talk about your book, Stop Selling and Start Helping, it's, we need to produce things that are relevant to people based on what they're asking Google.
Exactly.
You know, how much does it cost for, you know, for a Redwood deck or whatever they're typing into Google? We should be standing there with the answer instead of the HGTVs of the world and the Yahoo answers and all the other forums out there. So
sure. No, that's great. And that's a great example. Another example that I've used, I don't know if you've heard of Marcus Sheridan, the sales lion.
Yep.
He had a company called River Pools and Spas and did a very similar, you know, where they're now the most trafficked pool related website, like in the world or something, because he just started, answering questions, writing blogs and putting together videos.
Yep.
that answered every single question that they ever had about fiberglass pools. And, I use that example all the time, which is great. And Marcus is a great guy too.
He is a great guy. He was actually on, one of our first episodes. So if you're listening to this, scroll through, I forget the exact number. Maybe we'll get it linked up in the show notes for you guys. But Marcus is he's the guy when it comes to that stuff. So let me put my devil's advocate hat on for a little bit here with this whole content marketing thing. There's two things that I get from people, and I just want to throw them in front of you and just have a conversation. The first is you know, I'm not getting any leads right away when I write a blog, you know, and I need leads now. That's the first thing that comes to mind is that, you know, what kind of expectations should there be? And the second thing, I'll just throw them both out. You can respond however you want. How do I track this stuff? How do I know that it's working?
Yep.
All right. So there you go. There's my two little
things. There you go.
There it is.
I'll hit the tracking one first, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So tracking comes down to, at least the way that we look at it, is measuring it from a traffic standpoint, certainly as far as how, you know, are you getting more traffic in general, right? So is this blog driving somebody to the site? And then what we try to set up is some sort of, and I think you do a great job of it too, Tom, is the, you know, just the idea of capturing somebody's email. And that email becomes a lead. And if you can, what we try to focus on is either a downloadable ebook or a downloadable checklist or a, you know, something that's kind of behind a wall, behind a gate, we might call it, whether it's again, a video or a download or, you know, something like that, because that's what, if somebody's willing to download something and get a free whatever. And in our case, we, with the remodelers, a lot of times we have a, what we call the ultimate home remodel checklist, which is basically, hey, if you're thinking about getting started with a remodeling project, you know, here are the things you need to look at. And then that's what we use as kind of the lead capture for the websites put out there. And it's really basic as far as the ability to get to that. So somebody clicks on something, it's not literally on the top of every single page. It's also embedded somewhere in the blogs that we write and produce for folks. It's also embedded from a visual standpoint as a call to action button inside the website as well. So the tracking side of that then comes as to how many people clicked on that thing, how many people actually, you know, plugged in the information once they clicked on it. And then what, from a converting standpoint, so if I had 10 people clicked on this link this week, three of them downloaded it and one of them called, you know, you can track each step, along the way and then realize if that one turned into a, you know, turned into a, an actual project or not.
All right. So on that note, before you get into the rest of this, I want to ask on this, email capture thing.
Yep.
All right. So, you know, if you go to my site, motorheart.com, and it's, you know, the message that's being screamed is for the contractor who is wanting to make more money. He's tired of being on the hamster wheel. And, you know, I'm offering things that are relevant to helping his life, you know, be better as a contractor. If we go to your websites, there is content that is relevant to, you know, to that remodeler who or contractor who's trying to get more leads. And, so there's a clear... there's a clear path to the pain.
Correct.
If that makes sense.
Great way to put it.
Yeah. Yep. So what about, you know, on a remodeler site or a painter's site or a deck company site or a landscaper site, somebody just hops online and they Google landscapers, blah, blah, blah. They land on the website. They just want to get a bid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What have you seen as a good call to action or thing behind the gate, like you were talking, that a contractor can offer people that they're going to give a crap about?
Yeah. A lot of it still is on the education side. And what we try to do, and this is a hard conversation to have with contractors in particular, because they, at least generally, they seem to have the same mentality, which is that's all people want. They just want a bid. So, you know, I just mm-hmm. need to give them a quote, and I need to quote everything that comes through, and, you know, no qualification, just quote everything. What we really try to point out and focus and start out up front is, who is your ideal customer, and define who's that person, not just the one who's going to tire kick and want to quote and you know, spend all your time doing all this stuff and then give it to their best friend and or give it to the cheapest price or whatever. So although price comes into play, what we try to do is push more toward the qualification process. So that's where, when we put things out there, like, and again, you've done the same thing, videos or sign up for our email newsletter, those are easier steps for somebody to jump into something without saying, hey, I want to quote. It says, hey, you know, before you even work with us, and for an example, if you go to joltcms.com and you click on our contact page, which is like, do you have questions? Mm-hmm. One of the first things we say, you know, hey, here's your form. You know, we'd love to hear from you and see if we can help you out. But first read this. And what we actually have is a blog that we've written that is 4 reasons why not to work with us. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a qualification blog that says, hey, if price is all you're concerned about, then we're not the right fit for you. If you're in an RFP process, we're not the right fit for you. If you're, you know, looking for overnight results, we're not the right fit for you. And if you're, you know, if all you want to do is get a project done and we're in and we're out, we're not the right fit for you. So what we try to do is lead somebody through the process so that before they request a quote or before they download something or before they take that next step and waste my time, which ultimately they could if they're not qualified yet.
Right.
We try to get them qualified by saying, hey, you know, here's the ideal client for us in a nice way. And when I say, you know, you can read it, you can put a link to that if you'd like in the show notes too. But it says it in a nice way, but basically what it tries to do is say, hey, we're focused on results, which takes long term. We're not the cheapest. So if you're looking for the cheapest price, go to the next guy, because we're not going to be the one. And so we try to weed out some of those ones before they even fill out the form to get a quote or whatever. So that's kind of option A. Option B is, yeah, I hear you, Matt, but everybody just wants a quote, mm-hmm. which I get. So what I do in that case is we do homework. And so what we suggest is, and there's actually a template on the Remodeler Marketing Institute resources page where you can download a template, basically. And it's, in this particular case, it's for remodelers, but it could work the same no matter what kind of contracting business you're in. But basically set a set of questions that may be max 10, 12 questions. It doesn't have to be a ton of questions, but to say, you know, but before I provide a quote for you, we'd like for you to fill out this form and answer a few questions for us. Mm-hmm. And that's where you talk about, okay, what exactly is it that you're looking for? What kind of price range are you thinking that you're going to have from a budget perspective? How quick or how slow are you planning on starting this project? Have you been thinking about this for 3 years and you finally, you know, saved up and want to do something, or did you just start thinking about this? So there's just a series of questions that, again, before you waste your time going out to a house, having an hour long conversation with somebody, coming back and spending 2 hours, you know, putting a quote together, then following up on that quote and maybe going back out to the house to go over it with them. All those types of, you know, I mean, by this point, you've spent 4, 5, 6 hours potentially on a potential project, whereas if you had them fill out this relatively simple form, then you get a whole lot of that data before you even go out. And what happens is, once you get that homework, you can then judge whether or not that information justifies going out and calling on that person. And we do 2 things. One is, we can look at the answers that they gave you and say, hey, this doesn't match up, right? They want a Mercedes, but their budget is for a Honda or whatever. So you can say, hey, this doesn't look right. So then you can call them and make it a short potential qualification call that says, hey, you're asking for a Mercedes, but you got a budget like a Honda. What's the flexibility in that budget and mm-hmm. that kind of thing? So you're gonna have that conversation. The other is, and we just had to do it this week with a prospect, is they didn't fill out the form before we met with them. up to the day. And we said, so we had a meeting with them at 1:30 in the afternoon. And I said, if we don't get this by noon, you know, if you don't have the time to answer a few questions for us, then it's, you know, we'll have to reschedule because it doesn't seem like it's a priority for you. And sure enough, he didn't do it. So we rescheduled, you know, we didn't go to the meeting about 5 minutes before the 1:30 mark. The homework came in because we emailed him and we left a message for him saying that we weren't going to be there. And we rescheduled for this coming week. And we've kind of put a line in the sand that says, hey, here's how we do things. Mm-hmm. And while that may seem like harsh to some people, how, you know, you're going to hurt somebody's feelings, you're going to offend somebody, they're not going to want to work with you, that kind of thing. But when you put your line in the sand, a lot of times it does build credibility. It says, hey, these guys really, you know, they're sure in themselves, you know, they're not just going after anything and everything. And really, again, on the flip side of that is if they don't have 5 minutes to fill out a form to answer a couple questions before a meeting, then this is not something that they're, you know, I'm not the right fit for them. I can tell them. So it's kind of a long way around. Does that, sure, that answer no, that's your, awesome, your thoughts there?
And what I love about it is you're taking control of the sales process, you know, from the get-go. And you know, because we, you know, if, whether you're a painter or a remodeler, marketing guy or whatever, we're experts at what we do. And we have our systems in place and ways about going things that we can deliver consistent results for our customers or homeowners or whatever it is time and time again. And if we're not able to take control of that sales process, then it's just going to be a hassle down the road. So talk about expectations with content marketing. Let me just also quick side note, guys, we've referred to blog posts a couple times here as content marketing. Content marketing could be videos, it could be webinars, it could be speaking event, it could be many things. We're just, I don't know about you, but my mouth usually just goes to blog because it's easier to talk about that.
It is. Yeah. Good point.
But content could be any vehicle that we're, you know, communicating, you know, with our prospects on. So expectations.
Right. Yep. And just to finish that point too. So I do a video every single Monday morning called Monday Morning with Matt, the Marketing Man. And it's a video that's certainly considered content. I post it in the content on remodelermarketinginstitute.com. And again, that's just another option. We also blog on that. We also have resources, downloadable resources. So I think all those are good examples of content for sure, content marketing. So as far as leads go and the speed and the expectations and things like that, generally it does take time. It's not something that happens overnight. But what we try to do for those that are looking for something quicker is then we try to add in the idea of a paid campaign of some sort. So we still want to produce the content. We still want to write blogs, produce videos, do downloads, you know, whatever we decide is the right piece of content. Mm-hmm. But then we try to get, you know, hey, get out on Facebook, and we can help too, but a lot of times the contractors have the ability to do it on their own. Get out on Facebook, you know, spend $5-$10 on a Facebook ad, and we can help, you know, kind of narrow down who you should be talking to and that kind of stuff. So I think when we add the paid side in, what we typically look at that as kind of a short-term fix, because ultimately we don't want to be paying, you know, every single day, every single week, every single month for paid stuff that doesn't have a residual effect. And that's, I think, the big difference between what we call pay-per-click paid advertising, whether that's through Google or whether that's through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or anything else that you're talking about there, the paid side of things versus what we call the organic side, which is, I think, where we build most of our good quality stuff. Like you said, when somebody searches a Google and you pop up in the main results, not the paid section, but the actual main results there, that's what we call organic or natural type of a approach. So the paid thing does good from a short term. The organic or natural side is much more effective from a longer term, because once what we do today, so the blog that I write today, I'll use an example on the Jolt site. I wrote a blog, it was probably 3 years ago, and I've reused it and kind of retweaked it here and there, but it was nine tips from baseball, stolen from baseball, you know, to help you in sales or something like that. I can't remember the exact title. That blog itself that I wrote 3 or 4 years ago is still to this day the most visited traffic piece of content on my website. Why? That's one of those things, you know, people search it for baseball. I don't know if they search it for, you know, related to baseball and business, or, you know, there's all kinds of reasons there, but I get all kinds of traffic from that one thing from 3 or 4 years ago. Whereas if I paid for a Facebook ad 3 years ago, that goes away the day, you know, as soon as my budget is expired. So there's no residual effect on a paid side. So that's why we really try to focus on the ongoing writing of content and producing that. So that's one piece. And I think paying for, you know, exposure shorter term, and again, depending on who it is from a business perspective, you know, who the contractor is, whether they're painting or roofing or remodeling or plumbing or whatever it might be. And then also who that ideal audience is, if they're commercial related versus, you know, consumer or residential related, if their target is a male versus a female, if, you know, all those things would determine which platform we would recommend, and spending what where. The other then other piece on that is from a short term is any kind of existing database that you may have. Mm-hmm. So if you've got existing customers or existing prospects or even existing vendors, partners, you know, supporters, whatever you have, family, friends, any of that, is to get on email, because even if you've got 200 people that you can pull from, you know, that you've done business with in the past, or maybe you have had proposals that you did for in the past, any kind of email that you have, that's your biggest and best, we call owned, you know, you own that piece of media. Whatever right. I do on Facebook is Facebook's. Whatever I do on Twitter is Twitter's. If I do it on my own site and I do it through my own email, that's your biggest, you know, piece of owned media. And even, you know, the different types of podcasting, which is a great, great tool. But if, you know, Apple or if Stitcher, you know, whoever decides to change the way that they do things, you know, we lose that opportunity. And that's completely out of our control. Whereas with an email, if we've got an email, then we can get right to those people. And so I think a short term way is what we try to do is to say, hey, reach out to your existing people, share that content that we have, that we're building and producing, that's good stuff, make it shareable, try to ask them to share it. You know, if you've got a good relationship with people, send that email out and start an email campaign or an email, you know, an ongoing drip campaign that says, hey, once a month, twice a month, whatever it is, we're going to start sending out this great content. Those are going to be your short-term wins because they're either going to refer somebody, maybe they, you know, worked with you 5 years ago, but, you know, they, you know, their roof is leaking now and last time you helped them with their gutters or you painted their inside, now they need paint on the outside. So those folks who, you know, sometimes they just don't think about it until they're prodded with that, and email is an outstanding tool to get that shorter term result, I think.
You know, email is a great way to obviously stay relevant. You know, so let's say you're a house painter and you paint the interior of somebody's home. Well, after they hire you, they now have different needs. You know, they need yep. to know how to wash crayon off the wall.
Sure.
You know, or how to touch up the wall or whatever it is. So those are great opportunities to create a video, a short couple minute video of a how-to, and you can send that out in your email each month, you know, things that are relevant to people based on the phase that they're in as a buyer.
Right. And, yeah, that's perfect.
And so, you know, it doesn't end when we're after they write us a check. So were you going to say something there?
Well, I just had a conversation this week with a guy who does gutters, mm-hmm. And he was saying a lot of the same kind of deal. And he said, you know what, ultimately, and he was a rare find within the industry because a lot of times, you know, a contractor doesn't quite understand or it's just new to them, this whole idea of helping versus selling or content marketing or inbound marketing, whatever you want to call it. But this guy seemed to get it and he did pretty well. And he said, what I would rather, you know, what I want to get across is how to do this right. And even if they, and his audience is more a home builder, so a custom home builder that he goes in and works with. So he doesn't necessarily work with the consumer directly. So he deals with builders. But he said, I'd rather them, even if they don't work with me, I'd rather them make sure that the contractor they're working with is doing the right thing for them.
Right.
So if I can educate that builder on the right way that a gutter should be put on or the types of gutters that are there or whatever it is, the process, the tricks of the trade or whatever, he said, you know, if I can help them ultimately, you know, make a better product and result for their client, mm-hmm. then we all win. Everybody wins. The customer wins, the builder wins, whoever did the gutters, whether it was him or his competition. So that mentality, I think, is great. And if you go about it that way, and I don't know, have you ever read the book Go Giver, The Go Giver?
Yep.
Outstanding book. Yeah. And one of the first, they have these five laws of stratospheric success. And the first law is the law of value. And it says your true value is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. And I think that's an outstanding quote and concept of how you go about doing business, is if I can give you more value than what you are paying me for, even if that means you may not even pay me this first time, or you pay the other guy, but you remember learning something from me, you'll remember that the next time. And you'll either tell somebody about it, or whenever you have to do that same thing again, you'll come back to me, or, you know, there's a variety of things that come back around on that. But that whole, you know, giving more in value than you take in payment is a huge mentality shift. I mean, it's a big deal. You know, people don't like to give away. They don't like to discount. They don't like to, you know, why would I give away my secret sauce? Why would I give away the tricks of my trade and all that? But if you have that mentality of what we call, what I would call the abundance mentality versus the scarcity mentality, right? So we have the scarcity mentality, which is, I got to get what I can. There's so many competitors out there. I don't want them to see my stuff. And I'm not going to talk about price because price is sensitive, and I don't want people to see all my stuff, you know, all my pricing and whatever. And we say, you know what? They're going to find it anyway. If your right. competitor really wants to find out how much you charge to paint, 10x10 room, they're going to call and pretend to be a customer and ask what you charge. And yeah, I mean, there's ways to get around it. So what we say is, put it out there. You're much better to be found and be honest and be clear and open and all that, as opposed to, like I said, that's the abundance mentality. Is there's plenty of work for everybody. Let's get out there and do the right thing and help people and you know, give them what they're looking for, and then ultimately it all comes around and everybody wins, I think.
Well, I love what it does for how you position yourself in the marketplace, because most contractors won't take the time to consistently create content.
Sure.
And so the more content you create that's relevant, that answers questions and all this other stuff that we've been talking about, it elevates you in the marketplace and establishes you as the expert to which they measure all the other people by.
Right.
So,
we say to try to start with 10. There's got to be 10 questions that you hear every time you meet with somebody, or every time somebody calls in, or every time you call on somebody, whichever way. There's got to be 10 questions and 10 answers that you have for all those 10 questions that you rattle off every single time, and 9 times out of 10. And I spoke at the remodeling show last fall in Chicago, and I did a workshop thing, and I said, okay, write down your top 10 questions, and then we're going to throw them up. We're going to write them on the board and kind of talk through them. And I had to stop them. You know, I had to cut them off because everybody, you know, everybody had, there's just so many questions that they know pop to the top of their, you know, their mind right away, because that's the kind of stuff. And that's what, again, Marcus Sheridan, back to the pools example, that's exactly what he did. He said, I'm going to write a blog. And again, in his case, maybe overboard, but it worked. One blog every single day, and I'm going to answer every question that we ever get related to fiberglass pools. And the same thing goes, and that's what I try to do on our blogs, is what are people asking when I have a conversation with them? What are their concerns? What are their challenges? A lot of times in our world, they say, how much does it cost? How long is it going to take? And what are going to be the results? And you know, what can I expect? And so we write blogs, and I've got a blog that was recently written that's called The 5 Most Common Website Questions That We Get Asked, right? And so here are the 5 questions, and here are our answers for those questions. So doing that kind of stuff, I think, is a big way. And like I said, if we can start with 10, don't feel overwhelmed. Those 10 don't have to be written overnight. They don't have to be written tomorrow. They don't have to be written this week. But at least write down those 10 questions and then start with one of them. And whether it's a video, whether it's a written out article or blog, whether it's just put together in an email that you send out, you know, whatever way you put it out there, there's a million different options with that. But get those 10 questions, start with one, and you know, try to be consistent, whether you do it once a month, once a week, whatever it is. But start with 10, make it easy, go after the simple ones, and I think that makes a huge difference to start that way.
So can we talk some tactical content stuff here real quick?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
So questions we hear all the time, you know, how long does a post need to be, or a video need to be? What, how crazy do I have to get with, you know, doing SEO and optimization of all these things versus just writing stuff that's helpful to people, you know?
Right.
What are your thoughts on all that stuff?
Yeah. The first thing is to simplify. I mean, the same way that even if you don't think you're a great writer, you answer questions all the time. If you're in sales, or you own a business, or you're a one man show or whatever, you're answering these questions. And so write it as though you're having a conversation with somebody, or video it. My video series, if you take a look at, like I said, on the Remodeler Marketing Institute, I literally have a miniature studio in my office, and it's literally a big blanket that looks like a backdrop. I've got a decent light that I maybe spent $100 on, and I use my iPhone. And I stand in front of it. It's mostly my head and shoulders, and I do a maybe 45 seconds to, I think the max I've done is about 3 minutes. And it's just as a straightforward, I'll pick a topic and I'll say, hey, here's a, you know, here's what I'm going to talk about today. And I talk about it just like I'm having a conversation with somebody on the other side of the camera. And, you know, it just comes across as simple and, you know, hits those points that I hear a lot. So I think that's the gist, the easiest thing, or the most important thing, I guess, to say is make it a conversation. Don't try to use fancy words. Don't try to not be yourself. Don't try to be this. You know, if you're doing video, don't, you know, try to go over the top, and you don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to make professional videos and hire a crew and all that kind of stuff. Some of the best ones, and I there's a guy here locally, who does a video. He literally holds his own phone while he's standing there doing something, and he'll point something out in a, you know, so he's like doing a little selfie video that says, hey, you know, I just walked into this homeowner's house and I noticed this XYZ, and here, you know, this is something to look for. If you see this, da 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 da, and, you know, have a great day. Right. So it's a half a minute deal, but it's a little nugget that somebody can see and has, you know, it's a little good piece of information. So again, you don't have to feel like you have to be somebody or not. When you talk about length, I think what we try to determine length is really based on the content that you're putting out there. If you're talking about a, you know, a 7-step process of, you know, how to do a, you know, some sort of painting style, or, you know, doing a stucco look on a whatever, you know, something like that, or, you know, something that's more detailed, it may involve either a blog or a video that takes a little bit longer, and that's okay. I think people understand that, you know, if it's a more detailed piece of information, that it's going to take a longer time to do it. But typically, what we try to do is roughly 400 to 500 words if we're talking about a blog, which is roughly a page mm-hmm. and a half on, you know, 8.5, 11. And then most importantly, at least from my perspective on the visual aspect of a blog, there's a couple things. One is, in that article, make sure you have a really grab your attention type headline. So, you know, get your attention, be kind of creative, be fun. One of my favorite ones is for us is your website sucks. Mm-hmm. So we have a blog that says, you know, your website sucks and here's 14 reasons why. And, you know, so there's a, that's going to grab your attention. And I send out an email that actually the subject line was your website sucks. And that was my most opened, most responded, most, you know, all that stuff, because it was provocative and it pushed the limits a little bit. And certainly I had a couple people back out and said, hey, you know, that's offensive, but they're not my type of client. So if they don't, if they can't take joke and enjoy, you know, some of that stuff, then that's okay if they unsubscribe. But, so, you know, a great headline. Second thing then is bulleting out, you know, having whether they're bullets or whether they're just kind of subheads or bolder head, you know, sub headlines as you go through, because if you can grab them in with the headline, the next thing most people will do is kind of skim over and see if this is something worth digging into. Mm-hmm. And by having a bolder kind of a second layer of text, whether that's colored or whether it's just a dark color or bigger size or something like that, that's typically, so you grab them in the headline and then you get them and they'll glance over, right? So if it's the 10 steps to finding the right contractor, then I want to lead out with those 10 steps as darker bullets, so I can just skim over and get the 10 steps and walk away if I have to. Or if this really intrigues me, then I'll dig into, you know, and read the whole thing. And then the other piece with all of this is make sure that no matter what it is that you're doing, it leads to some sort of action. And we go back to the whole, you know, the definition when we started this conversation of driving profitable customer action. That's the whole goal is, yeah, it's great to help people. It's great to put information out there and all that is all good. But ultimately, you know, we want to run a business and make money and get people to do something and get people to buy, you know, buy something from us. But if we do it in the right way, then, you know, that's the best way possible. But again, what I do see a lot of times is the failure. Somebody's doing content, they're writing a blog, they're doing videos, they're doing all this great stuff, but then there's no, what do I do now? And so you're just left with, oh, that was pretty cool, you know, good information. And then nothing from there. So having that call to action. One of the other things you asked about was SEO or search engine optimization. Less and less now, I think, are search engines focused on the specific words as much as they are, and it's crazy to even conceive how Google does what it does. But this whole idea of intent, right? So if I'm from a searching standpoint, if I type in painter, right? Google makes the assumption that I'm looking for a painter. Most likely that I'm looking for a painter, not that I'm looking to, find a Vincent van Gogh, right? A painting. So they understand painter. They also know that I'm sitting here and outside of Akron, Ohio in Stowe. They know because of my IP address and where I sit on my computer and my Wi-Fi and whatever, that I'm likely, if I type in painter, I'm likely looking for a painter near me. So they'll feed up, information that's more specific to Stowe. So even if I'm a painter and I have a painting business in Stowe, and I don't say painting in Stowe, painters in Stowe, painting it, if I don't, overdo it with words and all that kind of stuff, but my website talks about being a painter and having and doing painting and home painting and residential painting, and it's kind of tied in with all that. Google knows that site, even though it may not be professionally optimized, that site is going to be relevant to that person's search. Now, granted, there are other people who may have done a better job of optimizing and putting the time and effort into tweaking things and writing things, and there's some nuances associated with all that. But again, I think it's, when I go back to my first point of simplifying, is answer questions the way that you'd have that conversation secondarily, then start thinking about how is this gonna be found on the search and stuff like that, because then you can go back and tweak, you can change the headline a little bit, you can make sure that you add some keywords in there here and there or something like that. So I would focus on the simplicity and getting that content out there. But Google does a great job of finding good stuff. And if you're providing good stuff, meaning good content, good information, good resourceful and educational information, then you're more than likely to be found that way. The other stuff kind of is secondary, I think.
Yeah, Google, at the end of the day, Google's a matchmaker.
Absolutely.
And
an unbelievable one at that.
Yeah, absolutely. that whole intent thing is crazy. So what? How often should a contractor be creating and posting content?
Great question. Answer would be it depends. in general, what we have found is 2 to 4 a month. So whether you do it, every other week or once a week seems to be the kind of ideal sweet spot. Now in my world, we try to post, I write blogs 2 to 3 times a week, and do a video once a week. So, there's that works for us, but for when we do, remodeler sites, kind of our base level that we do for folks is 2 blogs a month and 1 email, that we send out once a month. And then if they are kind of at the next level, we may do 4 blogs a month and then also add a video into that. So we're doing 1 blog or article each week, and then 1 video each month, and then send out 1 email each month. They're kind of, and those emails typically then are sending out information related to that content that we're producing. So my ideal suggestion would be a couple times a month, but at the same time, start with once a month. See, don't overwhelm yourself and feel like you've got to, I got to write 2 blogs a month or 4 blogs a month, because that's what Matt said. Write 1, see how it goes. Write 2 in a month and see if it changes. If you get more people to come to your site, or you get more people filling out forms or whatever, then try 3. And then, and then maybe you find your own sweet spot is 3, and that's the best way to go. Or the same idea would be not just on quantity and frequency, but the type of content that you're putting out there, right? Produce a blog or write an article, and then maybe try a video and see which one you get more, more engagement or more reaction from, and then focus on that world. And a lot of that goes back to, again, who's that audience, right? So if I'm trying to talk to the female homeowner, mom of 3, and she's my ideal target, then there are certain places and certain things that are going to resonate more with her than I am with the guy who's the, maybe a you know, corporate salesperson who's on the road all the time right. and likes listening to podcasts, right? So it really depends on who it is that you're targeting when it comes to the actual content you're producing.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, that, that mom with the kids at home and things like that. And, you know, having been in the industry a long time, I know one of the biggest pain points of that mom at home is, you know, are the people going to be creepy when they come into my house? Are they going to leave a mess? You know, and things like that. So I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm going, man, there's a couple of videos right there, you know?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, you could do, you know, hey, here's Nathan, here's, he's our foreman, then it's going to be running your job and he can create a little video that's on the website that can be shared with people.
Yeah.
A little intro on that, that person coming to the home and the crew. You could also do a, a video slash blog post on, hey, this is how we, you know, cover and protect a work area so that you don't
Absolutely.
Have a mess afterwards. And all these little things you do position you as the expert, and they also justify why your price is going to be a little higher or a
yep.
lot higher.
Yep.
So,
yep. Yeah, that's great. And that, yep. those points almost to the T. I have a blog and also a speaking presentation that I do that's called 5 Steps to Shorten the Sales Cycle. And if you look on the Remodeler Marketing Institute, also there's a downloadable ebook that walks through that exact process. And we include homework, which is another part of that process to mm-hmm. say, hey, you know, get good information. But one of those steps in there is be more familiar, right? So have that familiarity. A great, great example that I heard within the last couple of years is of a doctor who actually. At the end of each week, his staff will give him a list of those people that are coming in as brand new patients the following week. So it's not going to be a ton of people, you know, 5, maybe 10 people or something like that. It's a relatively small family practice. But the doctor, the primary physician, takes home this list and actually will physically give them a phone call either Saturday or Sunday just to say, hey, this is Dr. So-and-so. I know, you know, changing doctors or going to a doctor for the first time is a big deal. I just wanted to reach out to you and introduce myself, see if you had any questions, and, you know, tell you that I'm looking forward to seeing you this, you know, this coming week or whatever. Hmm. And unbelievable customer service, unbelievable credibility factor, unreal from a customer service standpoint, just the whole deal, not, you know, from the top down, it's the guy, you know, it's the doctor who's calling. It's not just an automated machine or one of the nurses or whatever confirming your appointment. It's actually the doctor saying, hey, I understand this is a, you know, this can be a concern of yours. So I wanted to make sure that you're okay. Just that process. And then the whole way through is saying, hey, I'm calling because I want to make sure that your questions are answered and you feel good, you feel comfortable coming in. So that I use that again as an example in the process of this kind of shortening the sales cycles. If you can build that familiarity, and specific to what you had said about a video of the person who's coming into your, you know, to your house or whatever, whether it could be a video mm-hmm. that's pre-recorded that just says, hey, I'm Tim. I've been doing this stuff for 15 years. I love dealing with people and, you know, whatever, a little bit of background on who that is. It can be the same pre-recorded thing that you just send a link to that, you know, just send out an email prior to that person coming out, or it can be a customized message that says, hey, Mrs. Smith, I'm Tim, you know, just wanted to introduce myself. I know it's sometimes uncomfortable to have contractors come into your house. I love that idea of that, you know, building familiarity. And that goes back to the content piece too, because if in that initial, you know, sales or, you know, initial call, somehow they brought up the, you know, how are you going to keep my stuff clean or something like that. And then you can refer to them, you know, refer them back to a blog that you wrote, you know, 3 months ago about that very thing. Then they know, hey, these people think about this stuff all the time. It's not just something that I asked the question, therefore they came up with an answer. It's something that they, you know, that they already addressed. So I think that's great stuff.
Yeah. There's a water feature and landscape contractor down in Nashville, Derek Johnson, and he has a company called JVI Secret Gardens. They have a garden center and all this other stuff. And he, a lot of times, will send a video like the day before to the homeowner, like a selfie video of him and the team as they're loading up the trailer with that person's, you know, water feature stuff.
Awesome.
Or things like that, or plants. And they'd be like, you know, hey, Matt, we're looking forward to coming out tomorrow. You know, we'll see you guys at 8:00. We just wanted to give you a quick glimpse of what's coming to your house tomorrow.
That's
and it
awesome.
Just engages people. Or Kelsey Hermans at Simplify Painting in Colorado Springs here. She she's been sending videos when the team is out on the on somebody's job site and they're taking that first dip of paint.
Nice.
And putting it on the wall.
She's sending experience. Yeah, that's
bingo.
Great.
She's sending that video to the homeowner, and then the homeowner, what's so cool is a lot of them are at work or whatever. They will they're sharing it with their friends at work. They're posting it on their own, you know, Facebook page, and it's getting more eyeballs onto what, you know, the company is doing.
Yeah, so that's outstanding.
And back to your doctor's story. You know, if I were a betting man, my guess is his practice is probably pretty strong.
Unreal. Yeah. And again, I don't know him personally, but I read a story about that, you mm-hmm. know, about it. And it was just, I was hugely impressed with the whole concept of that. It's one step above, you know, building familiarity is one thing, but being the owner calling and making a face-to-face, you know, something or a contact like that, I think is just a huge relationship builder for sure.
Love it. So couple more questions before we wrap up. And this one comes from just things I've heard through the years from people, and it's not just contractors, it's just business owners in general, but they'll reach out to a company to do, and I'll just air quote this here, to do SEO.
Yep.
Okay. They'll sign up for a monthly package that could be $800, $1,500, $2,000, whatever the heck it is. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Do you know, great, you know, question. What I mean? I'm just curious. What does that mean? And why would I need me or you or anybody need to spend that much or not? Or when might be a good time to have to spend that much?
Great question. Yeah. And that's sometimes a scary thing. And in our world, again, another blog that I've written is thanks to all you guys who act like jerks, because it makes us good guys actually, you know, have a decent job, because people, and on the flip side, I guess is a lot of people have been burned. And so it does make it more difficult sometimes to come in because they don't trust you. And, you know, somebody said, yeah, I'm doing your SEO and I'm going to charge you $1,000 and here's what we're doing, but there's really nothing to show for it. And it's kind of, you know, smoke and mirrors kind of a thing. So what we, you know, again, back to content is I've got a blog that's on the Jolt site that actually is called our SEO process. And it walks you through step by step of what we do from a search perspective, walking through, starting with keyword research and how we narrow those down and how we connect that to the pages that you either have or don't have. And do you need more, you know, do you need new pages relative to this and that? So the kind of, I think the deep question you're asking was, do I need it and what is it? And the do I need it, I say absolutely. I think everybody needs some sort of SEO, whether they do it on their own. And again, kind of that may sound counterintuitive to what I said before, which is, mm-hmm. hey, just write yourself and things like that. But from an effectiveness level, definitely adding that to the mix is a big step. But what I try to do is to tell people, don't worry so much about it when you get started. So that was kind of my answer before, was focus on the content, focus on answer the questions, be yourself, that kind of thing, and then address SEO later. But then adding the SEO is like the frosting on the cake kind of thing. I mean, it's the thing that gets, if you know what you're doing, mm-hmm. there are a lot of little pieces of what Google looks at to justify whether your site shows up or the other guy's site shows up. And so, you know, what we say on an ongoing standpoint is, and we do a lot of folks who just, they don't buy into the ongoing thing, and I understand, totally get it. And so we'll just kind of go through an initial optimization process where we go through and say, hey, we're just going to build a foundation, a really solid foundation of search, on your existing site, and, you know, start with that. And that goes through keyword research, what we do, and we call keyword mapping, which is saying, okay, we've found how people are searching. And we found these pages on your site that are relevant to those keywords. So we're going to focus on those pages. Or we've realized that, hey, people are searching this way, but you don't have any content on your site that addresses that. So we suggest creating some new pages. So that's what we call keyword mapping, which is kind of mapping and connecting the keywords with the right pages. And then we actually write code and content for those specific pages. So if it's 10 pages or 15 pages or 30 pages, we actually write titles. What are called meta titles and meta descriptions, which are the things that you see. So mm-hmm. whenever you're on Google and you type in, you know, painter in Cleveland, What pops up the blue, you know, the actual clickable part is your title or title tag, meta title. There's a bunch of different word names for it, but that's the title. And every website owner has the ability in one way or another, whether it's through a programmer or through a system like WordPress or whatever on the back end, to define exactly what that title says. And the telltale sign when I look at somebody's website and can tell that their site has not been optimized is if I search for them and the, you know, what shows up in that blue text is home hyphen painter company name, you know, that's, and so that's just because that's one of the main things that both Google and consumers see. So that title is really important. The second thing then is what's called the meta description, which is that those two lines below that blue title and below the actual URL of the page that you're linking to, if you're in a Google search, that description is also something that is seen by Google and it's seen by the search engine, or it's seen by the consumer. And so you want to make that some sort of compelling, and as a default, either it'll go and it'll just grab the first, you know, whatever few words that it sees on the page, if you don't have it defined, which can or can't be bad. You know, if you have decent content, maybe that's okay. But for the most part, we try to really focus that on, again, focusing on the keywords and the types of questions and pains and stuff that people are having. And then the ongoing part. So that's kind of the why you need it. And so we'll build a foundation and that, you know, we can walk away and we see results. Sometimes within 30 days, sometimes it takes 90, 120 days, depending on, you know, the competitiveness. If I'm in a big market, what type of business it is, you know, there's some variables on that. But a lot of times we see a big jump right away because we did a whole lot of good stuff to the site. And then we may see a little bit of a lag because Google says, hey, looks like something cool is going on over here. Let's bump them up in the rankings. And then, let's kind of balance that out. They just did some changes and we'll kind of balance it out. And then it tends to bounce up after that lag period. But then what happens is you'll see, and we provide reporting on a monthly basis for our clients where we say, okay, here's where we started as a baseline. Here are the 30 keywords that we're trying to target for. And here's where you sit for them today. And 30 days later, we provide a report and it says, remember where you were there? Here's where you are now. And 30 days later, here's where you are. You know, so we kind of look at the variables and track that over time. And what happens is if we just build the foundation and we track that for you and we looked at 6 months, 12 months, whatever, you're going to see this nice big spike right at first, you know, the first few months, because what we do works and it does its thing. And then it may level off a little bit. And then either you'll drop in total number of rankings or you'll drop in the number. So I may be, you know, where I was sitting number 7, I may now be number 17 or something like that. So over the span of time, if you don't continue to add content and don't continue to add new, good, relevant, entertaining, educating information, Google says, hey, you know, they were relevant then, but 6 months later, they're not as relevant because they haven't changed their site since, you know, June of 2015 or whatever. So that's where I think the monthly fee comes on. At least that's how we charge on a monthly standpoint, is for writing those blogs. We post the blogs, we optimize the blogs, and then in some cases we send out the emails that are associated with those things as well. So that's where the kind of ongoing thing. And that's that range that you mentioned, you know, maybe it's $500, maybe it's $2,000. At least from what we would define that is, it's all dependent on what we kind of asked before. Am I doing one article a month and one email, or am I doing 4 articles a month and 1 video and 2 emails? You know, so that's where I think that range tends to vary.
Well, you know, and as you're talking, you know, it's making me think of, you know, how many times as a contractor, you know, have we been, I'll just tell you for me, have I been standing in front of a homeowner through the years and, you know, I'm trying to help them make sense of why I'm 10 grand and the other guy's $2,500.
Yeah.
You know, and the other guy might be, he may not be licensed. He may not have any training. He may have, you know, obviously a less skilled workforce. Maybe he's not a legit business. He could be a guy doing it part-time on the side. There's a million different reasons. And so just like we stand there in front of a homeowner and, you know, we get pissed off when they go with the other guy and not us, you know, man, I'm the expert.
Yep.
You know, this is what I do every day. And I can't believe they're hiring this other guy. I would caution the contractors listening to this to, and listen, I'm not saying hire, Matt, you or anybody else that's ever been on this show, I'm just, you know, that's a decision they all have to make for themselves. But my,
sure,
my urging is that they hire somebody who's a pro. You know,
yep.
If I have a problem, if I'm going to build an addition on my home, I'm going to hire the guy who lives and breathes this stuff and has a track record of doing really good work with a lot of happy people and a lot of results and things like that, that he can point to. So,
yeah.
You know, I've just seen it so many times where we get upset because people won't pay our prices to do whatever our trade is. And then we'll turn around and we'll nitpick, you know, the experts in these other, whether it's an attorney or a bookkeeper,
yeah,
or a web guy, you,
yeah,
know.
Good point.
So,
yeah.
Yep. So before we wrap up, tell us a little bit about your new book.
So yeah, Start Selling or Stop Selling, Start Helping. And you can find it at stopsellingstarthelping.com. The concept is a lot of what we just talked about here today. I give a ton of examples. Marcus Sheridan is mentioned in the book. Joe Polizzi from Constant Marketing Institute is mentioned in the book. There's a couple other guys that I referenced that do this stuff really well. But it's a compilation of the last 3 or 4 years of my blogs, basically, that I kind of pulled together and categorized in different sections from, you know, the beginning part of, you know, why traditional sales doesn't work anymore, and related to, like I said, the buying process is different and things like that, down to, you know, making sure that people realize nobody really cares about you or your product. They just care how it's going to affect them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. I don't care officially. I don't care if you use Benjamin Moore or if you use Lowe's paint or if you use Sherwin-Williams. If it's going to last the longest and make it look the best and you convince me of that, that's, and again, I'm sure one of those is the better one and there's reasons for that and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, I don't care. You tell me, you're the expert and you know, let me make that decision to what is applicable for me. As opposed to, hey, we've won all these awards, or hey, we've done all these things, and hey, look how great we are. They don't care. Get past that and get to the guts. Again, a lot of the stuff too about positioning yourself as an expert and building that credibility and all that kind of stuff comes right back down to this mentality of helping instead of selling. The questions that that last one we were talking about with SEO.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we've got a blog on our site that literally walks you through. It's 9 or 10 steps of what our SEO process is. And a lot of people, that scares them to death. Why would you give out your process? Why would you tell people, you know, exactly what you do? Well, some people may be able to do it themselves and maybe they can't afford what we do, but they can take it back to their, you know, their internal guy and maybe that helps them. And someday they can't afford us or they know somebody who can or something like that. So the whole concept is, like I said, it's taking that mentality and going back again to the go-giver reference. You know, giving more in value than you take in payment. You know, looking at it as I truly am here to help somebody and not just to, you know, knock you over the head and sell you something no matter what. And there's a big, I write about this in my own experience as a salesperson. I've always been just nervous about sales. It's, you know, I feel like I'm going in there and the only way to come out positive is if I close the deal, right? I'm going in there to make a sale. And what I've realized over time is, a no is okay. We're not a fit for everyone, and that's okay. And to go in there with, hey, if I'm here and I can help you and you can afford our price and it all works out and we're a fit, that's great. But if we can't, either I have a couple people I can refer you to, or everybody walks away and we're still friends and everything's okay. You know, there's no offense. So that's the underlying piece. Right. So again, it's stopsellingstarthelping.com.
That's awesome. You know, it's reminds me. You know, back in Chicago, you know, if you're listening to this and don't know, I live in, you know, Manitou Springs, Colorado. But when I had my company back in Chicago years ago, we used to get referrals from people. I'd say, how'd you hear about us? They're like, oh, Mary Johnson, you know, or whatever, said that you'd be a great company for us to hire. And we ended up not doing Mary Johnson's project. You know, we weren't a good fit for Mary Johnson, but because we're not high pressure, because we treated her with respect and assumed that she was going to make a good decision for her and her situation, you know, we stayed likable.
Right.
And then she's talking to her neighbor or her friend and, you know, maybe they did it themselves. Maybe they hired the other company and then later on they referred us because they wish they would have used us or whatever. So,
right.
you know, it's you never know when something's going to come back around. If you just, like you said, you know, if you go into it where you want to add value, you want to help. And listen, we all want to sell stuff. That's why we're on here, you know. And, you know, we all need money to run our businesses and take care of our families and reach our goals. This is a lot more fun than the high pressure stuff. I'll tell you that. So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it is. And I think that comes across too, Tom. I think when you go into a meeting or a presentation or a phone call or whatever it is, and you're genuinely there to try to figure out if I can help you out, as opposed to going into that with, all right, this is a great opportunity. I think I can get, you know, 10 grand out of them. It's just a whole, you know, they see that walls come down. The conversation is much more fun. You enjoy yourself. I mean, it's just, there's all sorts of benefits to it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it totally takes the pressure. If I was in a sales training thing years ago and the presenter, he says, listen, my number one goal, the only thing I really give a hoot about is, and side note there, does anyone say that anymore? Give a hoot?
Anyway, give a hoot.
Yeah. I don't know where that came from, but
all right.
Squirrel.
Yeah.
But his whole thing was, let's just see if it makes sense for us to keep talking.
Yep.
You know, that let's just be open and honest. Let's talk about it. And he never felt any pressure to go sell. He just went in and had a good time and just said, hey, does it make sense for us to continue the conversation and go to the next step each time? So
yeah, that's great.
So that is. So Matt, how can people find you? How can they reach out to you if they're interested in what you do or just want to check out your stuff?
Sure. A few different websites, which I think will be in the notes, but joltcms.com is the main company, joltcms.com for content marketing services. TheRemodelersEdge.com. RemodelerMarketingInstitute.com is the institute where it's just all a bunch of great free informational content, videos, articles, resources, that kind of stuff for, like I said, remodelers is the focus, but any sort of contractor will benefit from the information that's there. StopSellingStartHelping.com is the book site, and then feel free to email me at matt@theremodelersedge.com.
That's good stuff. I'll make sure we get all that in the show notes, and really appreciate you hanging out with us on a Sunday.
Yeah, glad to do it. I'm glad we're able to connect.
And I look forward to watching you and learning more and seeing what you keep bringing down the road here, man.
Great. Same is true for you.
Awesome. Well, Matt, appreciate your time. And everybody, check him out in the links in the show notes. And hit him up if you have any questions and all that other stuff. And build an uncommon contracting business. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks again, Tom.